Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. And TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of this week and kink. This week and kink.
Hey guys, what's going on? You're listening to This Week in Geeks opening weekend. Holy crap, we're back! Because it is May, it's the opening of movie season, and well, it's not often we get a chance to talk about these movies among, I'd say, me and my co-host love these things more than probably anybody on the site, but I am joined with...
Steve Snowball Siler, and I do apologize if I sound kind of crappy. I'm at a Starbucks, because, I'm just busy and couldn't be home. But I wanted to talk about Iron Man. Well, so let's talk about Iron Man.
Well, that and you're outside enjoying this, oh my God, lovely weather today.
Oh my goodness, it's 22 degrees in Toronto and it is gorgeous.
So guys, if you're listening to this, I should probably warn you, we're talking about Iron Man 3. There are going to be spoilers. In fact, almost nothing but spoilers. So if you haven't had a chance to see it over the last 3 days, I'm counting Thursday, it was out. Tough luck. You should probably stop listening now. So, in a nutshell, Steve, before we dive into our spoiler-filled thoughts, what's our spoiler-free thoughts of it?
Well, my spoiler-free thought is that it is definitely better than Iron Man 2. And for me, it's probably not as great as Iron Man 1, but it is still pretty high up there.
Yeah, I would probably be inclined to agree. In fact, I would actually say you need to see Iron Man 1, and you can almost, you can skip Iron Man 2 and go straight to this, but you need to have seen the Avengers.
I would sort of argue that you don't necessarily have to see the Avengers, but it does tie into it to a certain degree, so it just means that if you hadn't seen any of the Avengers movies other than just the Iron Man movies, you can still kind of get what's going on, just minus a few details here and there.
Yeah, I mean, more or less, you get why he's the way he is in this movie, but when he starts referencing the Avengers, it helps to know what the hell he's talking about. So now that we've given you our spoiler-free thoughts, or at least Steve has mine, yeah, like I said, you can pretty much, like I said, just go right into this one from Iron Man 1 after the Avengers. But let's get to spoiler thoughts. Last chance, guys. Ready to bail. 1, 2, 1, 2. No, sorry, too late.
Let's do this.
Spoiler thoughts. You know what? I actually had a lot of fun with this one because of actually what it did with the Mandarin. I've read the Iron Man comics for a while when I was a kid, and the Mandarin in the comic books, he's meant to be this man who finds an alien spaceship that has these 10 magical or space-born rings that basically can shoot lasers, ice, fire. They can do really cool things. And I was really worried coming into Iron Man 3, like, oh my God, how are they going to do this? Because it's an enemy that's based out of ridiculousness. When you really look at it in terms of the new Marvel Universe, they've only scratched the surface of the alien threat and the otherworldly stuff with Thor and the Avengers. So I'm thinking, I don't know if Iron Man's ready for that just yet. And luckily, they didn't actually. They actually treated the Mandarin really well because turns out he's just a big idiot.
Yeah, I actually was kind of surprised by that. I didn't even see that coming of what the Mandarin turned out to be, because it was I was worried too. Like everything was sort of with him was sort of steeped in magic, and then but there hasn't really been a lot of magic introduced into at least the Marvel movie universe. And I was kind of wondering how they were going to sort of keep that realness of it without introducing a lot of. Oh, now we have to explain what magic sort of is without having to get into the alien technology thing. But with it, like the way that the Ben Kingsley sort of took basically the two parts of his character was absolutely amazing. And I was sitting in a theater. I saw it about a week before, like actually on Monday, this past Monday, and Don Cheadle was in the audience. And but every time that there was a really good, like, or at least when the Mandarin showed up on screen for showing what he really was, everybody started laughing. And it was like, I looked over at my friends who were there with me, and they kind of were like, this is okay. This is kind of neat. So I like the way they turned that out. And it, without making it seem cheesy or overdone or, I don't know. It was good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, now that we're talking about spoiler things, the Mandarin is basically, he's a front created by the guy who heads AIM, or Advanced Idea Mechanics, whose name is so unmemorable, I can't even tell you what it is. Something Killian.
Killian, yeah, I can't remember the name either.
Yeah, I have an awesome first name, and who gives a fuck last name? And he's creating this persona so he can help drive weapon sales. I'm pretty sure we've seen this plot in other movies before. Basically, creating an artificial war, the war on terror, etc., so he can sell this thing called Extremis, which is something they do talk about in the comics. Now, I've only ever read the first issue or two of Extremis, and it's supposed to be, I know in the end Iron Man stores the suit within himself, so he just has to snap his fingers and there it is, more or less. So I can't really speak with an expert opinion on how well this handled that, but I was more or less okay with it. I just felt like maybe the bad guys weren't as cool as maybe they could have been. Like, I guess I wanted the Mandarin to be more of a threat than this front. This Killian guy, like, he reminded me a lot of Molten Man in a lot of ways from Spider-Man, the guy who can basically melt metal because he heats up really fast.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, in that regard, I felt maybe the villains were a little weak outside of Ben Kingsley. When he's in the Mandarin persona, he's actually legitimately threatening. When he's in the, oh man, I'm just an actor, that's when he steals the scene. Whoever's in that scene with him is completely overshadowed by just how stupid this guy is. But it's not a stupid that's insulting. It's a stupid you actually have fun with.
Oh, totally. Like, that shows how well of an actor Ben Kingsley really is. And he can be able to take, like, the most dramatic roles, like what the Mandarin is sort of personified is, but then turns it completely around and turns in a really fantastic sort of comedic performance. And you're right. He does steal the scenes every time. Like, once it's revealed who he is, he totally steals everything that he's in. I would say even argue, like, whenever he's on screen as the Mandarin, it's really cool. And I don't think actually, I know there's been movies sort of done that's been like, oh, we'll create a fake war or whatever to kind of to fool the public, kind of like Wag the Dog sort of thing. But this, like, I sort of sit in the theater, I sort of like, this is the first time I saw anybody kind of creating a fake terrorist for their own means, and then sort of kind of keeping sort of putting their own vice president in place. That it was that basically he was right, he could control the supply and demand of terrorism. And so it was kind of neat to see that and personified in that sort of way. And I do agree with the sort of the bad guys. To me, it seemed with the extremists, it was a little bit too inconsistent. There were moments where it was very easily foiled, and then there were moments that was like they turned him into like Superman, and I couldn't 100% get on board with that side, especially like near the end on the oil tanker. That was the only thing that kind of confused me a little bit.
Yeah, because you'd think 42 Iron Man suits would kick the living shit out of these guys. And that last action sequence is probably one of the coolest, if not the coolest, in the entire franchise. Because I like how they call it the house party protocol. And one of the neat things about that sequence on the oil tanker is the fact that they had the Hulkbuster armor. I was hoping I'd see something like that. You'd see his deep sea armor, the stealth armor. Basically, if you've been following the comic books for years, you'll see everything he's ever done.
Mm.
That was really impressive. But
well, you were talking about the stealth armor. Did you happen to catch right at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't catch it. I honestly, like, it was my friend that had to point it out because I didn't see it at all. And I was kind of wondering about that. And all of a sudden, when my friend said, "Yeah, did you see the little shimmering thing?" And I was like, "No," and that just sort of blew my mind. But yeah, all these suits that were there, it was like reading all the comic books, because everything. If you're a huge Iron Man fan, you're going to recognize every single suit that was there.
And the fact that he was able to jump out of one, jump into another, I think it shows just how fantastic the world really is. And I can't think of any other action hero movie or superhero movie that's really had that type of kinetic energy where it just kept moving. I mean, even compared to the Avengers final battle, I don't think it was as well paced as this one was.
Actually, I would kind of beg to differ. I think the Avengers battle was really well paced. I mean, I loved the... anytime, or basically it was sort of like the very comic book esque where they would sort of have the one shot kind of going for every single hero as they were fighting in New York. And the end battle, even though it was really cool in certain moments, it just seemed in certain times that it was kind of overdone a little bit, especially when Guy Pearce is fighting Tony Stark. That just seemed to me a little off-putting. It's like, okay, really, you're going to go up against an iron suit and you have nothing on you? Like, that just seemed weird to me.
Yeah, that I'll definitely give you that. That was a little bit strange and admittedly kind of stupid. Now, yeah. The only thing that really kind of off-put me about the final scene was the fact that more or less Pepper saves the day. But that's cool in a sense, but in a way, it should have been Tony to really kind of finish it. And that's something we should actually probably talk about. Some of the other performances in this movie that I think kind of got pushed to the side. I haven't been a fan of Gwyneth Paltrow for a long time, but the Iron Man series has really turned me around on her. And I really liked her, number one, number two. Here, when she was on screen, fantastic. I just wish she had more to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's sort of like a character that is not really tapped into as much, or at least the potential that she has. I did like it when basically the Tony Stark's home is getting destroyed, and she just sort of she gets into this suit, which was
that was kind of cool. Neat.
That was really cool. But her sort of story when she gets caught and like kind of gets injected with extremists, I was like, yeah. I could have, no, it just doesn't seem right. It wasn't against Gwyneth Paltrow in her acting. It wasn't against sort of the story plot-wise, but it just sort of seemed like it was, they were trying to kind of change her from the damsel in distress to someone that could basically go toe-to-toe with Tony. And it seemed out of character.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that. It just seemed almost kind of shoehorned in. In a way, that really sucks. I mean, she could have had her own subplot where she's trying to find Tony and following clues. But no, you've been caught by these assholes, yay. And it really sucks. And another role that was underutilized in this movie, as you mentioned, Don Cheadle. He was on screen, he had some really great moments. But he wasn't there enough at all.
Yeah, I did like the scenes that he was in, and it's kind of funny. So just before the screening started, the one I was at, and then that's the one where Don Cheadle was in the audience. Yeah, he was brought up for an interview with City TV, and I'm going to say the name of the interviewer because of how stupid it was. It was Kevin Frankish who interviewed him, and one of the questions that he asked Don Cheadle was, would this movie be your legacy, or would this franchise be your legacy? And he's like, Don Cheadle, how should I say, no, I'm just kind of happy whenever anyone sees any of the movies I'm in, and this is not my legacy in any way, shape, or form. And I just sit there, I'm like, this is the most awkward interview ever. It was dumb, but yeah, I mean, he was great in the movie. I think he definitely replaced Terrence Howard pretty well. He was okay in Iron Man 2, but Iron Man 3, I think the scenes that he was in was great. I just wish I saw more of them.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't given a whole lot to do. However, I do like how they explained away very quickly why the War Machine armor looks like the Iron Patriot from the Dark Avengers storyline. I thought that was a neat little reference. Like, I love how he just has the line of, it tested really well with focus groups.
Yeah, that was a neat little nod. It sort of keeps it in there in the movie universe, but still kind of, not necessarily panders to the fans, but just gives a little nod to the fans.
Oh, yeah, and that's something I was remarkably happy with. And the fact, like, seeing the suit move around, it doesn't look as goofy as it does in some of the, like, press photos. Another thing that I liked about the suit is they use it against him.
Mm-hmm.
And they capture the president inside the suit, and they're going to execute him right at the end. And that's a great symbol. Like, here's your great hero. Watch us destroy him. Wah-ha-ha-ha. That was kind of neat. I guess, Steve, overall, where do you think, in terms, because this is the first Marvel movie of Phase 2, and the finality of, in essence, the storyline for Tony Stark, like, this could be a logical closing point for him.
I can see it as sort of being a logical closing point, especially the way the movie ended. It made it look as if this could be, at least maybe for a while, the final sort of chapter in the Iron Man franchise, but still kind of keep him in the rest of the movies, because right now, as far as we know, there's no plans for Iron Man 4. I do like that they're sort of trying to take it into a new chapter and are not sort of trying to rehash the same Iron Man story with just different villains within the universe. I think it's sort of, and they even mentioned a few times in the movie, like, sort of the phrase Phase 2. And so it would be interesting to sort of see where things go. I think I even seen, like, something that Joss Whedon had said in regards to Thanos. It seems as if I think they're going to save him for the much bigger finale. And he's just, you're going to see as Phase 2 goes along that he has a lot of a really big influence throughout sort of this universe. And, I mean, we might see a little bit of it or of his influence in Thor when it comes out in November. But I think it's November. But still, it'd be interesting to see what Phase 2 is going to entail. I mean, because they got, like, a huge franchise under the belt now, and it just, like, it's going to be interesting to see where the story goes and where they're going to want to take the story, and whether, like, I don't know. I'm interested to see what Guardians of the Universe is going to be like. I'm interested to see what Thor 2 is going to be like. What other movies are going to be in Phase 2?
I know they're talking about doing Doctor Strange. They're talking about Ant-Man as well, which I think they're finally getting pre-production rolling on that. I think it was Edgar Wright or Simon Pegg said something had been moving significantly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Captain America, Winter Soldier, too. So.
Yeah. The only part that kind of killed it for me is, you look through the credits of this movie, and just before you get the shawarma scene, quote-unquote, the extra thing they always toss in at the end of these movies now, it says Tony Stark will return. That's cool from a comic book standpoint. I'm glad he'll be in other things. But it kind of cheapened the impact for me. Because he has that big speech at the end. He's like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I wear the armor and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I am Iron Man. And he doesn't have the arc reactor in his chest. He's happy with Pepper. His story could have ended. And it's not to say he couldn't be involved as, like, hey, here's Tony. He's back to help us out. Like, here's an invention. And I'm going to leave now. Sort of thing, right? And it just, I don't know, it kind of cheapened it for me. And now that the odds are amped up, because Disney and Marvel now have this juggernaut franchise, the movies that have made the most money are the Iron Man and the Avengers stuff. Captain America did pretty well, and so did Thor, but these two franchises have done the best. And like you said, there's no plans for number four yet, and I think even Paltrow and Downey have said they don't know whether they'd come back for a fourth. I kind of want to see the Iron Man story end here, but involve other characters from the Marvel Universe. I know for Avengers 2, they're talking, or they've already confirmed the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. Mm-hmm. And I know Mike Laidman has mentioned, what about Hank Pym, a.k.a. Giant Man or Yellow Jacket, who would be the next logical step for them, because he's just as smart as Tony. He's also the guy who invents Ultron, who would be a fantastic villain for a movie. I mean, Thanos is awesome, but now you're going up against a galactic-level threat. Something like Ultron would be a planetary threat, which might be, you know, in my opinion, that should kind of be where it should go next. Like I said, Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet, you've got a lot to set up in a lot of movies, and I think you're going to lose people by the time you get to the Avengers 2, depending on how they handle this.
Well, yeah, that's it's sort of interesting to see. Like, this is, I would believe, would be the very first sort of movie that it has been collaborated with Disney and Marvel. Because the Avengers, like, even though a lot of people are saying, oh, this is now Disney, like, this is now Disney Marvel, technically the Avengers was made before the deal went through. So this is now the very first iteration of the Disney Marvel franchise. And so I think maybe the way that Tony Stark is going to be portrayed is it maybe, like, he'll be kind of a leader within S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe not necessarily a Nick Fury kind of director, but I think you'll see a lot of him working with S.H.I.E.L.D. Just on its own, but still be Iron Man when they need him, because right now there's really no need for him still, or at least at this point. But I think he'll show up when he needs to be, and I think this will be a great phase two. Will be a great way to sort of not necessarily phase out the characters that we've already seen and gotten to love over these past few movies, but it will allow other characters to kind of show up and get to sort of stretch their legs, so to speak, and basically introduce the world just on its own that doesn't know anything about the Marvel Universe into the Marvel Universe, but in a very cool way that allows the characters to sort of be shown to, like, basically to a non-comic book crowd. And I'm interested to see what will happen, especially with Guardians of the Universe. I mean, that's sort of, that to me, so far as Phase 2, is the most ambitious movie out of the bunch.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the riskiest one, because it's the one not a lot of people know. The only reason I know of the Guardians of the Galaxy is because I used to read a lot of Marvel books in the 90s when Marvel was retardedly hot. And I read the Infinity Gauntlet. The only reason I know who Rocket Raccoon is because of Marvel vs. Capcom 3. So yep. That kind of says something. So I think Phase 2 will definitely be the riskiest of all the new Marvel franchise. And with Marvel getting creative license back to Ghost Rider and Daredevil, there's possibilities of including them in the larger universe. And
well, actually, Kevin Feige has come out and said that even though they have the franchise, doesn't mean that they are going to be making movies for them right away. I can see them maybe showing up in Phase 3, but definitely not. I don't see them coming up in Phase 2 at all.
I think they may get maybe a passing mention. Like, you might see an ad for Murdoch Law or something like that, or maybe someone might make a mention to seeing some weird motorcycle, but you're probably right. They'll probably develop those later on down the road. One thing I think I could probably say is kind of my closing thought on this. Iron Man 3 could have been a completely self-contained story, which is kind of what I liked about it. It doesn't necessarily need to be a part of anything else other than the lead-in you get from the Avengers movie. And I think in some ways it's probably one of the strongest in the franchise, and here's why. You are never bored in this movie. Think about how quickly it clips along. You're never bored. There's always something happening. There's always a reason for it to happen. Whereas in Iron Man 1, it's got a really awesome opening and a really awesome ending. In the middle, it just kind of meanders. And Iron Man 2 is nothing but a setup for the Avengers 2. And hey, I have a new thing. And actually, you know what? Go watch Everything Wrong with Iron Man 2 on, I think it's CinemaSins on YouTube. You'll see what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I'll link that. I will link both of these in the episode post. Like I said, not that we're flagging on these movies, but Iron Man 3 could have stood on its own, and I think that's its real strength. The fact that this one, I think it's more in-depth character-wise, and I think that's why I really like this one. Second, only because the only reason I really liked the first one more so than this is because that movie felt like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, I'm really invested. I have to pay more attention, if that makes any sense. Iron Man 1 just kind of, I don't know, it absorbed me into the world more, but 3 made me care more.
I agree, definitely. 3 definitely made me care more about the characters, especially the character of Tony Stark. And I mean, there's two things, basically. I do like the fact that they didn't focus on Tony Stark's alcoholism, as what a lot of people were sort of thinking that it was going to turn into. It really took the idea of the Avenger, or what happened in the Avengers, because it's like, this is the first time, think about it, that aliens were sort of introduced into this world. And to someone like Tony, who can only is very scientific and can only see what, like, believe what he sees, it's hard for him to be able to take in the fact that there are now aliens, and there's gods, and there's universes, and there's different dimensions, and he has to try to deal with that. And the only way he can deal with that is by what he said. He tinkers. He basically, to kind of keep him distracted. And I kind of like that sort of internal turmoil that he has, more so than just sort of catering to the alcoholism aspect, which was in the comics. Now, as far as being in standalone movies, I think every single movie in the Marvel Universe is a standalone movie. The only one that's not is the event, because you can basically watch every single one of them and without really knowing anything about the outside movies that it connects to, you could still watch it, and you wouldn't necessarily have to. There's a few things here and there that you'll miss, but each one could stand on its own, and there's not one movie that directly ties into the Avengers, only indirectly.
Yeah, I would say you're absolutely right on the kind of money. So I guess, Steve, final thoughts. Should people see this opening week? Basically, should they go to theaters this week and go see it and pay full price?
I 100% agree. And if you can see it in IMAX 3D, even better.
Yeah, honestly, the 3D in this was not distracting at all. It worked. You don't really notice it. And that's, I think, the best part about certain 3Ds is it's never distracting. So, yeah, Iron Man 3, go check this movie out. We will be back on opening weekend for Star Trek in the Darkness, for sure. Steve, you don't even know this, so this will be new information for you. This month's Twig Topic Show is Star Trek the Franchise. That's right, we're going to take everything and do as best as we can to cover as much of it for this month's topic show. And we're also going to talk about this on Future Imperfect. We're going to talk about the new Abrams movie, Star Trek in the Darkness, with Leo, that sci-fi guy, not too long after it comes out. So be looking for that in about 2 weeks, give or take. And then we're going to come back for the Twig Topic Show towards the end of the month. And then, of course, in June, Superman. What more can I say? You know what the topic show is going to be then. So you know what to look forward to this summer. In fact, I'm really looking forward to doing the opening weekend for Man of Steel. It looks awesome.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I'll even say this. Like, this is the first time I've been to the audience. I'll actually get a chance to see Man of Steel in L.A. I'm going to try to see the Grauman's Chinese Theater, which will be amazing.
I'm legitimately jealous of that because, yeah, you'll be there with Julian for E3, so...
Yes, sir.
Which is funny. You're not even the gaming guy. You're going to E3 this year. I'm not going because I'm not well. But anyway. So like I said, that's pretty much going to do it for us. So for this week in Geeks Opening Weekend, we have been...
Steve Snowball Sailor.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard, and I'll see you guys at the movies.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't make it...
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
You gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat f***.
okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek.
tune in next week to hear somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.